Blog Talk Radio.
Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to Talladega Super Speedway, Russell Branham, and Grant Lynch. As Grant always says, this is more than a race. This is Talladega. Tickets are on sale now for the NASCAR Camper World Truck Series Frizz 250 October 18th and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series Geico 500 October 19th. To purchase your tickets, call 877-GO-TODEGA or visit TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a lot of stuff going on in the NASCAR world tonight, and we're going to try to get everything going before at 7:15 Eastern time. We've got Jeremy Clements, driver in the NASCAR Nationwide Series, coming on. Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, has got him. And at the bottom of the hour at 7:30 Eastern time, we've got Mr. Brennan Poole that filled in for John West Townley this past weekend at Berlin Raceway. But at this time, we want to bring my good friend Reverend Joe on, and let Reverend Joe do the invocation. We'll get everything started. Good evening, Reverend Joe. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, well, good. We're all hurting a little bit, as all. Let's pray. Lord, we come before you, and we ask your protection upon all of us. We ask you to watch over us and guide us this week. Help us to guard our tongues, watch what we have to say. Be cautious. We've just come through a pretty tough weekend that was exciting and also very scary at the same time. So please, Lord, watch over us all. Watch over today's show and watch over this weekend's events. Be with those who are hurting. special blessings upon the Ward family and on Tony Stewart as he has to deal with this. Lord, be with us all. We thank you for all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Great invocation. Thank you very much, my friend, and everybody. You know, just like you said, we're on heavy hearts tonight, and we're going to try to make it through this show. We've got a big show. We've got Jimmy Clements coming on. We've got Brennan Poe coming on. But thank you again very much, Reverend Joe, for being our reverend. We
You're
sure
very
appreciate
welcome.
It.
God bless you guys all. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. God bless you too, Reverend Joe. Thank you, bud.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Reverend Joe. At this time, I want to bring on my good friend Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. Stephen, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Oh, my God. I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And like me and you talked about earlier, we got a lot to cover tonight. And you want me to go? I'll try to get started. And maybe we won't have any irate callers calling in about, you know, what's going on, because I know you've been watching social media, and I've been watching it also, and, you know, like myself and you, you know, we can't take any sides because of the position that we're in, correct?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's you know, I mean, you have to look at it objectively as what happened out there. I know, you know, you're reading through social media, you're reading some of the comments that have been posted to some of these articles out there, and there's some fairly irate people. But, you know, I objectively, I have to look at it in this way. Unfortunately, Kevin Ward Jr. lost his life at during a sprint car race this past weekend there in New York, as I'm sure everybody knows, after being hit by Tony Stewart. However, with saying that, one of the issues that I have to, take a look at objectively is that did Tony Stewart in fact do it with any malice? And based on multiple videos that, you know, have been posted online that I've seen, as well as pictures and some of the other information that is posted, I cannot say, I'm not a dirt track expert by no means, but I can say, you know, as far as the fact of Tony Stewart and any malice on his part, I do not believe that Tony Stewart did anything with any malice to cause harm to Kevin Ward Jr. nor anybody else on that racetrack. It's just an unfortunate accident that happened out there. And, you know, there's already some changes in play that I have heard about from some local tracks where they are now forbidding drivers from getting out of their cars on our active racetrack unless there's a potential for extreme emergency such as a fire or something of that nature. There are tracks already looking at changing some of the rules as far as that is concerned. And, you know, it's all done in the safety. Everything that's done in this sport has a reason, and unfortunately, typically it comes back to somebody has lost their life or somebody has been seriously injured, and there's had to be a rule changing to kind of cut down on that. And as we all know, racing is an inherently dangerous sport, but these series, these track promoters, the drivers and the safety companies that are out there do everything in their power to make it as safe as possible, but unfortunately we can't fix the unknown if we don't know what's going to happen.
That's right, Stephen. And, you know, you talk about the unknown, and I always say this, and Suzanne, she gets mad at me for saying it, but the way I was brought up, the good Lord has our number. Whenever our number comes up, we're going to go, whether we're on a racetrack, we're in an airplane. But my mother-in-law says that's not fair to the other 250 that's on there with you in an airplane. But, I mean, you know, whether you're in a shower, that's just the way I believe. Whenever your number comes up, it comes up. And, you know, we were going to do, you know, we talked about, you know, me doing the ARCA stuff and Nationwide stuff and you covering the cup stuff. But, you know, we're getting close for Jeremy Clements coming on. And if you want, I mean, we can let you do the cup stuff, Stephen, if you want to, and I'll put all my stuff aside, and we'll wait on Jeremy Clements, if that's okay, bud.
Sure thing, yeah. I'll run over the cup stuff from Watkins Glen real quick this weekend. So the Sprint Cup Series was at Watkins Glen this weekend for their road course, second road course of the year, and in which A.J. Allmendinger, he finally won a race in the Sprint Cup Series, first-time winner out there. The race was marred by a couple red flag incidents in which one of them, Ryan Newman and McDowell got into it, coming there. I think it was a sixth or seventh turn out there at Watkins Glen, putting McDowell into the fence, destroying both cars. Afterwards, Ryan Newman did, talk on camera as well as to MRN radio talking about some of the safety features of those aluminum walls that are there at Watkins Glen, and he was rather disappointed that NASCAR has not, and the track has not, looked into putting safer barriers in some of those areas. With that said, the second incident with the race red flag for about 30 minutes when Denny Hamlin destroyed the barrels at the end of pit road, causing about a 30-minute delay as well. Dale Earnhardt Jr. left out with the points lead, 5 points over his teammate Jeff Gordon, and Marcus Ambrose finished second there. It was a pretty intense battle coming there towards the end. Both of them raced one another clean. Neither one had any ill will towards one another, and it was a good, hard-fought battle there.
Yeah. It was. That was probably one of the best races that I've ever watched, Stephen. I mean, that was a real good race. I mean, it was super. And coming out of NASCAR, you know, I sort of got this little thing here, the 2014 Chase Grid. Everything, all the drivers in the green are locked in, which would be Dale Earnhardt Jr., Brad Keselowski, Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, Joey Logano, Carl Edwards, and Kevin Harvick. That's your drivers with three wins or two wins. And then you've got these that they show in the yellow have a win inside the current Chase Grid's top 16. Not locked in yet, but 8th is Kyle Busch, 9th is Denny Hamlin, 10th is Eric Almirola, 11th Kurt Busch, 12th A.J. Allmendinger. They're in the yellow, but they're not quite locked in. And the way NASCAR and Kerry Tharp does this is the orange. No wins inside the current Chase Grid's top 16, not locked in. 13th would be Matt Kenseth, 14th would be Ryan Newman, 15th is Kyle Larson, and 16th is Clint Bowyer. So after that said, Stephen, you know, me and you talked earlier about how many drivers would have wins and to make it into the chase, and you said 12 to 14, and we have 12 now with A.J. Allmendinger in the 12th position. And do you think, Stephen, with Matt Kenseth 13th, Newman 14th, Larson 15th, and Bowyer 16th, then you got the outside looking in. 17th, you got Biffle, Kane, Dillon, Ambrose. I mean, I can go on back a little bit, but do you think somebody outside looking in could probably leapfrog Kenseth, Newman, Larson, and Bowyer to make it to the 2014 Chase Grid?
I mean, taking a look at some of the tracks that we got coming up here, we got Michigan this weekend. We also got, you know, Bristol coming up. We've got Richmond coming up. You know, there's only but a few opportunities for these drivers out here. Unfortunately, I think we're getting down to the point that most of the drivers that are going to win at these races have already won at least one race so far this year. I mean, you take a look at Dale Earnhardt Jr., which has already, you know, won multiple times this year. The only one I think of this weekend that may have a chance to lock themselves in with at least one win is Greg Biffle on the outside looking in. You know, Roush has been inherently strong there at Michigan over the years. And unfortunately, I think when we get to, you know, Bristol, we're also going to have the same issue there. The drivers that have already won there have already won this season. We've got people like Kyle Busch and things of that nature that, you know, are very strong there at that racetrack. And it's going to be hard to go against one of those guys that, you know, we're coming up on some tracks like that. So, you know, with that said, I think what we were going to do is that we may have one more winner before we get to it, and the last will be filled in with anybody sitting on the outside looking in right at this moment. I don't think there's really a chance. We've come down past most of the wild card races as far as road courses, Talladega, Daytona, things of that nature where we have surprise winners, and we're back to tracks where we will see somebody that's inherently strong on those tracks win yet again.
Yes, I will totally agree, Steven. Yeah, I mean, you know, because me and you talked about it at the first of the season, you know, there's not going to be 16 winners. But anyway, Steven, at this time, we've got Mr. Jeremy Clements, driver in the NASCAR Nationwide Series. We'd like to bring him on at this time.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Jeremy, how you doing tonight, my friend? You're in the pit stop with Timmy Spine and Steven Wilson. How's it going, bud?
Doing great, guys. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And, Jeremy, if I can, I want to hand you over to Steven Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, and I'm going to go through some more of what we got going on. But and I'll come on after Steven gets through with asking you a couple of questions. I'll have one or two for you if that's okay, bud.
Sounds great.
All right, thanks, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy. This is Steve Wilson with SpeedwayDigest.com. My first question I have for you tonight is just here a couple of weeks ago, you had announced a crowdfunding campaign to get some sponsorship this year. Can you talk a little bit about how that came together and what were your thoughts and what were you trying to accomplish by going crowdfunding to get sponsorship on your car?
Yeah, it was an idea we had to just try to raise some extra funds. You know, the fans are always wanting to know how they can help. And I just thought it'd be a cool way to do that. Anybody can give what they want to give. You can log on to JeremyClementsRacing.com or on the Facebook page, Jeremy Clements Racing, and the link is on both those sites to do that. And it'll tell you there's a lot of cool stuff. You know, you give certain money, you get to do this and do that. So there's a lot of cool stuff. It'd take me like 5 minutes to sit here and tell you all about it. So just log on there and check it out. And, you can afford anything, that'd be great too, you know?
Yeah, and you know, obviously with you guys being such a small team, you know, it makes it very hard for you guys to go out there and get sponsorship, especially when you've got the mega teams dominating the Nationwide Series, especially on the Cup side, bringing drivers in, you know, through development and even Sprint Cup drivers. Do you feel that this is a possible way that maybe some of the smaller teams could all get together and use crowdfunding in order to get sponsorship?
Well, I mean, I think it would, you know, it's going to help us out for one race, but to do the whole season, no, it's not going to accomplish that. But it's something cool to do for a race or so and see how it goes. But as far as the whole season like these teams need, then no, it's not what you need to do.
And obviously, like I said, you know, you guys are a small single-car operation. You know, a lot of it does come out of you guys' pocket. What are some of the struggles outside of the sponsorship issue that guys like you face in the Nationwide Series?
Oh, man, it's an uphill battle every weekend. I mean, we race off the purse, and any sponsorship we get, we use to buy more tires that weekend or buy better equipment to run faster, and that's what it's all about. But it's hard to do that when you don't have the money you need to do it with. But, you know, we're trying. We don't start in part. We might not run the best we want to that weekend because we can't get new tires for the race, but I tell you what, we give her all we got, and I think feel like you got to respect that, you know. And I feel, and we can do good when we have the chance, and we, you know, give ourselves an opportunity to. And I'm excited about this weekend, getting back to Mid Ohio. We ran 10th through last year, and I know we can run good there again. So, and then we got Bristol, so that'll be good too.
And my final question for you is, you know, I'm going to throw you a curveball here out there. I'm talking a little bit about, tell us a little bit about how you got started and interested in racing and why you thought that you would try and pursue that through the ranks of NASCAR and through short track racing, and now you're in the Nationwide now.
Well, my grandpa, Crawford Clements, got me started when I was 7 racing go-karts, and he was a crew chief back in the 50s and 60s with his brother Lewis. And they were actually crew chiefs for Rex White, Buck Baker, Kyle Yarborough, just a bunch of guys like that. And I actually won a championship 60 with Rex White. So, you know, they got a long history in racing. And I always just was around all of it growing up and wanted to do it. And that's all I've ever wanted to do. And I just kept moving up from go-karts to four-cylinder dirt cars to dirt late models, to the ARCA series and then to Nationwide. I've been able to stay here for a few years, but I tell you what, you never know when it can go. And even, I mean, you're just, I'm very grateful for the opportunity I have each week. So can't ever forget that, because there's a lot of guys that would die to do that in my place.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight, and good luck the rest of the year. Just got through one final thing, and I'm going to throw you back over to Tim. I've had the pleasure of meeting Rex White several times, and he's a good guy out there. Finally, going to get him into the Hall of Fame out there, so that's a good thing out there. So, anyways, good luck for throughout the rest of the season. Hope the crowdfunding goes well. We hope you get some tires or something, keep competing there on the weekend. I'm going to throw you back over to Tim.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, Jeremy, it's Tim Spain at the Pit Stop Radio. Just want to thank you for everything that you've done for the sport and everything that you do for the charities and stuff like that. Just listen, and I've got one question, if it's okay. Back in 2004, you know, you was racing at 311 Speedway in North Carolina, and you had that little accident where the drive shaft broke and pierced through the vehicle. And I don't know if you want to talk about it, but injuring your hand, that sort of set you back a little while, didn't it, bud?
Yeah, that was a freak deal, but I believe everything happens for a reason. So, you know, it happened for something, but I had like 5 laps to go in a super late model race, and the drive shaft broke, come through the cockpit, and they got those hoop bars to protect us from that, but a piece just broke and came in there and did a number on my hand and arm, and they got me to the hospital and thought they was going to have to cut it off. They didn't think they was going to be able to save it, and they luckily did, and took 10 surgeries and a year later of therapy and fighting hard and getting all through it to get to where I was. I raced again a year later and was able to, you know, put it behind me. But it's definitely, you know, I still got a big mark on my hand from the skin graft. I had to sew it to my side for a month and all that stuff. So, you know, I reminded every day about it. But just thank the good Lord above. Saved my hand. I can still use it to steer those cars and bang those gears.
Yes, sir. Amen, Jeremy. And I want to thank you again for taking time out to come on with myself and Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. And like we do every week, Jeremy, we give drivers, whoever comes on, we give them time to to thank whoever they want to thank. And, Jeremy, you got the floor, my friend. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Thank whoever you want to thank.
I just thank the supporters I've had, RepairableVehicles.com, and Chuck and Charlie Tierney of All South Electric out of Georgia, and Bill and Tina Smallwood, and been a lot of people that helped me get here and stay here, and obviously my mom and dad, and everybody at Clements Racing Engines and JCR. So, you know, just want to keep at it and keep improving our stuff, and so we can win one of these races, which I think we can one day. We put our if we do the job, I know we can do.
Yeah, I know you can, Jeremy. And again, thank you very much for coming on the show. And if you ever want to get back on again, just shoot Stephen a text or email, and we'll definitely get you back on, bud. And good luck this weekend. Where are y'all going this weekend? Y'all going to Michigan, ain't you?
No, we're mid-Ohio, the road course. We'll get another road course.
That's right. I got paperwork straight over there, Jim. Yeah, but anyway,
yeah.
Sorry about that. But yeah, thanks
all
again,
good, bud.
And we'll be pulling for you. Be safe, my friend. Be safe. And we'll get you back
thank
on.
Thank you, guys, very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeremy Clements, driver in the NASCAR Nationwide Series. And while we're waiting on our next caller, Mr. Brendan Poole, I want to bring on my good friend Todd Bigsby. And, Stephen, I don't know if you've been watching social media, but Todd was at Watkins Glen. And I won't say it. I'll let Todd say it whenever he comes on. But he has some big news that he announced at Watkins Glen. You probably know.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Todd Bigsby, upstate New York, Watkins Glen, right there beside your door. What's going on, my friend?
Hello, guys. Yes, Watkins Glen International. Got to be a memory of a lifetime for me and my now fiance. I had the opportunity to meet Casey Mears and get his autograph. And I talked to the PR reps, and they talked to Casey, and he agreed to it. I had gone up on the Geico stage and proposed to my girlfriend with Casey Mears.
That's awesome, bud. That is awesome. So when's the big date?
Well, we haven't set it yet, but I got some things I'm working on, which I don't want to announce yet, some more surprises. So things to be working on as soon as we get the time to get her done.
Good. That sounds real good. Stephen, anything you want to throw at Todd? Maybe, you know, he's fixing to get married.
Well, congratulations, bud. Don't really have any questions for you. Just enjoy it.
Thank you. And since we had Jeremy Clements on, I got a really good picture of his car as it went by me and just missed opportunity to get his autograph. So there will be another chance for that.
Good. Sorry about this, guys. I'm DMing Brennan. Stephen, take over for a second. Let me get with Brennan.
All right, bud. Well, you're at Watkins Glen this weekend. What did you think of the race, and how close were you to the incident between McDowell and Newman?
That was actually just coming off from turn 5, only down about maybe 50 feet is when it actually all started. And I was over on turn 7, so we couldn't see it, but we did see it on the big screen. It's the last corner before the front straightaway where I was sitting right next to the track.
And would you agree with Ryan Newman about the soft wall barriers instead of the aluminum barriers that are currently in that location on the track?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I have to agree with him 100%. I was able to drive my Blazer around the track for autism, and just seeing some of the corners, I'm not surprised. Well, I'm surprised that that stuff wasn't in place already.
Yeah, and obviously over the years, I think that's been a troublesome corner, and I think that's where a lot of Ryan Newman's comments are coming from, is just definitely the way that that is used as far as the turn radius in that corner. He has taken some issue at it. There's a lot of people saying that they should have used the full course. What's your opinion on using the full course over there in that turn?
Well, being a road course, you know, when these guys are getting up to speed from what I got to see firsthand, I mean, any road course, I think all the way around that track should have some sort of safety barrier, because anything can happen at any given time.
Yeah, unfortunately,
okay.
That's true. Hey, Jim.
I'm sorry, Stephen. We've got Brennan. We've got Brennan Poo, driver for Venturini Motorsports and ARCA Menards Series. Todd, you want me to put you on hold and you listen?
Sure, please.
Okay, I got you, Todd. We're fishing to bring on Mr. Brennan Poo. And let's get, here's a button.
Let's get ready to rumble!
There you go, Brennan. How you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. I want to thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule. I want to give you a big shout out on your third place finish this past weekend at Berlin.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, we had a great weekend. You know, it's tough when you jump in a car for a first time and a quick notice with a bunch of new guys you never worked with before. But we did an awesome job, and I'm proud of everyone. And we were really close to winning the race. And we just needed a few more laps and maybe a caution there at the end to give us a shot at it.
Yeah, that's right. Myself and Suzanne, we were listening, you know, of course we couldn't watch because there was no TV time. But I was going to ask you that question. First of all, Brennan, I want to ask how John West is doing, if that's okay, or can you say?
Yeah, you know, he's getting reevaluated this week, but, you know, I spent some time with him last week leading up to Berlin, and you know, he's doing great. So, you know, hopefully he gets back in the car here this coming week, and you know, but I think everything's going to be fine. It was just kind of a precaution deal, and he just needed a little bit of rest. So I think everything's going to be fine for him. Nothing real serious.
That's 10-4. Good. Yeah, and I think you might have hit on one of my questions was going to be, Brennan, how hard is it to transition out of your car into another driver's car, you know, as far as the seat, you know, like you said, the team, everything was different, but, you know, y'all really done great to finish third with you being your first time working with them. But, just a little throw out there, if you don't mind, Brennan, I'm sure it's a big change, right? Because, you got to get your seat in there and get used to the team, the crew chief.
Yeah, you know, I'd never really worked with those guys before. You know, I'd been around the races and raced against them, but I had never, you know, had the chance to work with Jamie Jones as a crew chief and some of the guys on the team. And so, you know, I really had a lot of fun working with them. It was actually a nice change. And we had a lot of fun racing together that weekend. You know, we just had a blast. It was so much fun, you know, racing with some guys. It's just a little bit different, but you know, anytime you get in another driver's car, you know, you just kind of want to go do the best job you can for their guys and for the guy who was in the seat before you. And so I just tried to go in and do the best job I could for Zaxby's, for the identical movie, everybody who's associated with the 15 team. And, you know, fortunately, you know, things just kind of clicked with us right off the bat. And you know, we were quickest in first practice and led a bunch of the second practice. And, you know, we were trying to make a qualifying run, and we just kind of got stuck up with a bunch of slower cars, and we didn't get a good run in at the end, and I think we ended up, like, seventh in final practice. But the car was really good all weekend. We just, you know, we just started the race 2-3, and, you know, so I couldn't get going in the beginning of the race, and you know, after a couple cautions, we came in and got right side tires and made a couple adjustments and got the car a lot closer, and we made up some ground, and then on the final pit stop, you know, we took four tires and you made another adjustment, just tightening the car up because we were just so free. And on that last change, you know, we just went a little bit too much. We just got the car a little bit too tight, and I couldn't fire off as quick at the start of that run that I needed to. And I just lost a little bit of ground on the leaders. But once my car started coming to me later in the run and I started running those guys back down, you know, we just ran out of laps. But, you know, Venerina gave me a great race car. All the guys worked really hard. It was awesome to drive for Zaxby's and everybody associated with the team, the Identical Movie. It was just a lot of fun. It was just a fun race to run. And Berlin had been a tough place for me in the past. And to kind of go in there and tackle that racetrack with a new group of guys and run as well as we did, you know, I'm really happy. It makes me feel good as a race car driver to have done what we were able to do that weekend.
Yeah, and we will definitely give you a big shout-out. You've done really great, Brennan. And we always like to hear drivers. I love to hear drivers when they said, I had fun. We were really having fun. But I want to thank you again, Brennan, and I'm going to hand you over to Stephen Wilson. And don't be a stranger. And anytime you want to come back on the show, you just let me know or let Stephen know or Suzanne, and we'll definitely get you back on. But thanks again, my friend. And good luck this weekend. Be safe. And I'm going to hand you over to Stephen Wilson.
No problem. Thank you.
Hey, Brennan, it's Steve Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. I got two questions for you. First question is out of my curiosity. I saw some pictures this weekend from Berlin Raceway, and I didn't realize that beyond the backstretch there, it was kind of a grassy knoll. How far is that grassy knoll before you actually get to the retaining walls there at Berlin Raceway?
Well, you know, there's no backstretch wall, so it's kind of sketchy back there. You know, a lot of guys are beating and banging. I think the 98 car one time went off the back when we were racing hard for position. It's just crazy, you know. But it's I couldn't tell you exactly how much room there is. There's quite. It's kind of wild. It's like there's a big space back there once you go off the back, and then there's even a deer stand back. There's a deer stand. They got tires and all kinds of stuff back there. But you know, it's just Berlin is so it's so tough, man. It's just completely round. The back straightaway is not even a straightaway. It's pretty much just a turn. So you're just turning the whole time. So it's really easy to go off the back since there, you know, there's no wall. It just kind of goes flat and then just grass and woods and the deer stand. I think the deer stand is kind of funny to me, but
yeah, the deer stand is kind of funny. And that's why it kind of piqued my curiosity when I saw some pictures back there. I did not realize that there was really no back wall or anything back there. But, yeah, it just kind of piqued my curiosity to see something like that. I don't think any other track in the world could say they have a deer stand on their backstretch.
No, there are people sitting in and watching the race.
Yeah. Well, my second question I have for you tonight is that you've been in the ARCA series for the last couple of years. I think it's 4 years. You've racked up 5 wins, and you've kind of been running a limited schedule through those 4 years. How hard is it to adapt to the ARCA series, or you as a driver, how hard is it for you to adapt to any series where you're running such a limited schedule year over year? I think you only have one full year in the ARCA series.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. You know, you just really have to stay focused. Fortunately for me, you know, I've been able to test a lot of cars, so I'm in the car quite often. And, you know, being able to jump in the car and go race, you know, it's tough for any driver, especially when you're dealing with guys that you haven't really worked with a lot in the past. You know, so you just have to be focused, you know, and I had, you know, my dad's been awesome. You know, I don't come from a racing background at all. And I feel like the moves that he's made as a dad, you know, really helped me as a driver as well. You know, he didn't really know what he was doing, but you know, I've driven a lot of different race cars. I've driven a lot of different racetracks. You know, I think I've raced on 60 different racetracks in like 23 or 24 different states, something like that. So I have a lot of experience just going to somewhere new and having to go and be successful. So just having that, you know, experience as a younger kid growing up, it's just kind of something that's added to the skill that I have to just kind of jump in the car and go and be competitive. So I really feel like that's helped me a lot. You know, my dad made some great decisions on getting me in different cars and racing a bunch of different tracks and traveling around, and it's made me a lot better. And I feel like the dirt experience that I've had growing up too, which is also a move on my dad's part, made me a lot better as a race car driver too. And then just working on the cars, you know, and being in the shop a lot and being around all the guys and spending time with them and learning as much as I can. I feel like I have really good knowledge of the race cars now. And I feel like I'm able to talk to the crew chief, and we're able to make decisions together and really break down the car. And so we're able to make the car, you know, quicker because we just work together on things. And I feel like having that understanding as a race car driver is very important. And I feel like the good guys have that. So I study hard on that stuff, and I try to get as better as I can at not only driving the car, but learning and understanding how the car works. Just so I have knowledge to be able to make changes with the crew chief. I just feel like it makes us stronger, and I feel like it's what's really helped me be better. And then, of course, spotting. You know, I've been spotting for Justin Boston the past couple of years when I haven't been racing, and being able to watch a whole race from the roof and seeing how things unfold, it's just a different perspective, and I feel like doing that has made me a lot better as a driver as well. So it's just the things that I've been fortunate to be able to do, I feel like I've made me be able to adapt to just jumping in the car and going and running a race when I'm on a limited schedule. But, you know, I think it's fun that way, too. It's made it a challenge, and I like the challenge, and it's been fun. And fortunately, I've been able to be successful at it, and I've been blessed to be with a great race team like Venturini Motorsports, who's given me some great opportunities and put me behind the wheel of some awesome race cars that have been able to keep me up front. So, you know, I've just been blessed.
All right, well, sounds good. And I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Good luck throughout the rest of the year and what you got going on in the ARCA series. If you got any sponsors, anybody you'd like to thank, anything coming up, any new developments that you'd like to talk about, I'm going to throw the floor over to you and let you have a little bit of say.
Well, I'm racing the next three ARCA races, so I'm pretty pumped about that. I'm going to Springfield this weekend with Venturini, and you know, so I'm really looking forward to that. I love the ARCA dirt races. They're so much fun. But I just want to thank Zaxby's for letting me race for John West as he's taking some rest this past weekend. It was a lot of fun. It was a great opportunity. I appreciate all the stuff that they do for the race team and for allowing me to do that. And the identical movie. I've got the identical movie. It comes out September 5th. It's got Seth Green, Ashley Judd, Blake Rain, some great actors in it. I'm really looking forward to the movie coming out. They've been awesome. Blake's been doing concerts at the racetracks. It's just been really cool, and they've been awesome to work with and awesome to have on the race car, and I've got them on the car the next few weeks. So I'm really looking forward to those races and looking forward to Madison and DeCoin coming up as well. I love the short track racing. I love the dirt racing. And we're working on stuff constantly, and obviously as a race car driver, I want to race as much as possible. So hopefully we have some good things coming up, and I can race more and go have some fun and do what I love to do.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, bud. Good luck this weekend throughout the rest of your races that you have scheduled this year.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Don't be a stranger.
All right.
All right, Stephen, that was Brennan Poo. But anyway, Stephen, I think you – wait a minute. Hey, we supposed to be giving away something tonight, Stephen. We got a trivia question. I'm going to hand it over to you, Stephen. We got trivia.
All right, well, it's trivia.
We got trivia.
All right. Yeah, so it's trivia time. We're going to give away some stuff from Talladega Super Speedway that has been gracious enough to give some stuff up to us to give away here on our radio show. And I'm going to do – this is going to be another Talladega tie-in. And your guys are going to have to dig real deep for this one because this one isn't easily Googleable. So here goes. Bill France Sr. and Enoch Staley that built North Wilkesboro Speedway was planning to design and build a racetrack in North Carolina, which would eventually become Talladega Super Speedway. But due to local resistance, they had to move the track to Alabama. Which North Carolina city was it that Talladega Super Speedway was originally designed to be built in?
Oh, gosh, Stephen, I don't even know that one. Ooh, that's a good one. Callers, the number to call in is 215-383-3681. Looks like everybody's trying to get on Google, Stephen.
Well, they can try and get on Google for this one. They're going to have to dig real deep to figure this one out.
All right. Well, let's bring Todd on since Todd is still listening. We'll bring Todd on and see if he can answer it since he's here in the background. Todd, did you hear the question from Stephen?
Yeah. That one I honestly have no clue on. That is definitely a good question.
Okay, well, we'll put you back in hold since you was the caller waiting online. We're going to give you first shot.
I told you it wasn't going to be easy, and you're not going to Google this one very easily tonight.
No, they're not. And the phone lines, I don't know where everybody's at, but last week they blowed up. I don't nobody know that one, Stephen. Well, while we're waiting on somebody to call, Suzanne's manning the phone lines. And I hate to do this, but I'm going to go to the rule book to talk about the Tony Stewart thing. And, you know, just to tell you again, I'm not taking no sides. I'm just reading in Section 12-4.9, Behavior Penalties. NASCAR membership is a privilege. With that privilege comes certain benefits, responsibilities, and obligations. Correct and proper conduct, both on and off the racetrack, is part of a member's responsibility. A member's actions can reflect upon the sport as a whole and on other NASCAR members. Ideally, NASCAR members are role models for the many fans who follow this sport, regardless of the type of license a member may hold or the specific series in which a member may participate. I'm sure you've read that, Stephen. Just throwing that out there. And I'm pleading the fifth, and I'm just saying if and but. Can NASCAR, I don't know what's in Tony Stewart's contract with Haas, can NASCAR do anything to Tony Stewart after the incident at the dirt track upstate New York this past Saturday night?
Well, my understanding of the rule and my understanding as to what NASCAR will and will not do is solely based on what happens in their events and their events solely, meaning that Tony Stewart would have had to have done something in a sanctioned event while competing for NASCAR, the sanctioning body, or competing at a racetrack that was sanctioned by NASCAR in an approved series. So therefore, because of the fact that he was not involved in anything that was sanctioned by NASCAR, they are time limited. Even NASCAR said that they will look into this, and they will see what the investigation unfolds. But however, they are going to be fairly limited on what they can and can't do. I'm sure there are provisions in the rule book, as one that you just stated right there, that they could potentially come down on Tony Stewart. But on the other hand on this is looking at the other side of this coin is that Tony was out there competing on his own outside of NASCAR in a series that is not sanctioned by NASCAR, an event that wasn't sanctioned by NASCAR, and the track wasn't sanctioned by NASCAR. He was out there on his own free will, as well as other drivers do. You take a look at Casey King, you take a look at a multitude of other drivers that go and race in other series. A lot of times that these drivers do compete on tracks that are sanctioned by NASCAR, and they would fall under the NASCAR rule book. So if anything in this situation, the Empire Super Series, which is, I believe, the sanctioning series of the race that he was competing in, could potentially levy some type of penalty, whether it be monetarily wise or suspending him from competing in their events or things of that nature, but it's going to be hard, I feel, in my opinion, for NASCAR to actually come down on him other than to, unless it was something in the case of, like I said earlier, it was some case of malice, in which this, in my opinion, is not a case of malice. Tony did not, by anybody's means, say that think that he was going to go out there and do this. He had no intentions, no intent, and no malice towards any other driver on that racetrack. So I think, you know, my understanding is that he's done what he feels he needs to do. He's abided by the NASCAR rule book per the way that it is written. And it will just, you know, have to be left up to the investigators at this point, the district attorney and, you know, the track itself or the sanctioning series, which I believe is the Empire Super Series that sanctioned to the event to actually do something. Now, if, and this is a big if the investigators were to come back and they were to charge Tony Stewart in this incident with any type of criminal actions, then at that point, NASCAR could more than likely and very, very obviously invoke some of those rules in the rule book because of what you just stated, is that he has to maintain a decorum per what NASCAR feels is appropriate, and not only as a competitor, but as, you know, as a driver and as a person. He is a you know, people look up to Tony Stewart, whether you like him or not, and, you know, it really, like I said, it comes back to it. We could debate this all night long, and I'm sure we could, but unfortunately, I think it's out of NASCAR's hands at this point until either a criminal complaint is brought against Tony Stewart or he's cleared of all charges.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I've had people at work ask me that, and I said, I tell them, I said, let me read this 12-4.9. And I said, Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, will clarify this tonight. That was put perfect. Myself and Suzanne, we've been reading this since this incident happened. And, you know, it's like every other rule. Excuse me. Stephen, you know, that, you know, you can read it three or four times and still draw something different out of it. It's just the way it's read. But 12-4.9 does not say shall or should. So that gives you some leeway there, but you put it perfect. And that was letter A. And while we're waiting on, I'll go to letter B. This is same session, 12-4.9, behavior penalties. Letter B. Therefore, NASCAR views behavior rules violations with the same importance as technical rules violations. Behavioral infractions differ from technical infractions in that each is handled on a case-by-case basis. Viewed in context with an understanding of the prominence of the sport, the large fan following that the sport has garnered, the large corporate and sponsor support that the sport attracts, and also with an understanding of the passions that this can evoke, as well as the competitive nature of most NASCAR members. And fans, grant you not, we're not trying to solve the world's problems here tonight. We're just reading. We're doing ifs, ands, and buts, like Stephen Wilson and SpeedwayDigest.com is. We're just reading straight from the rule book, not trying to start nothing. But that was another section, Stephen, and I'll leave it alone at that. If you want to comment on that, I'll shut my rule book.
I'm just going to make this one quick comment on that section of the rule book, and it pretty much it infers right back to Section A, right as it is in black and white of the behavioral policy. In the past, NASCAR has used this as part of a penalty in suspending drivers and fining drivers in the past. We did see this last year, as recently as last year. I do not remember seeing this specific penalty being used this year, but in the past NASCAR has in fact used this, penalty to suspend drivers and to monetarily fine them based on their decorum while they were competing at a sanctioned event of NASCAR or at a track that is sanctioned by NASCAR.
Yeah. Yeah. I would totally agree. And, you know, Stephen, like I just said, you know, we are, myself and yourself, you know, we're not pointing fingers. We're not going to do that. I'm a big supporter of Tony Stewart. I'm a big supporter of NASCAR. I watched Kerry Tharp's interview. My good friend Kerry Tharp from NASCAR watched his interview on ESPN the other morning. And I'm sure you will agree, we're not going to point fingers. And like I said earlier, some of this social media stuff makes me want to puke. And I hate to say that. Well, that sounds like something Humpy would say. Humpy would say it makes me want to puke. It's just sick. I mean, you know, don't point fingers. There's a reason. There's something behind everything. Let the investigation go through. Quit trying to hang Tony Stewart. And I'm not taking up for Tony Stewart. And I'm sorry for Kevin Ward Jr. And sorry for his family. You know, thoughts and prayers go out to them. But it's like you get, I'm going to go ahead and say it. You get these NASCAR fans. Well, I'm not going to say NASCAR fans. You get these wannabe NASCAR fans that think they know every freaking thing there is to know about the sport. And I'm sorry I'm saying this, but I'm going to come out and say it. Let everything take its course. Let it take its course. And, Stephen, I'm sorry because, you know, myself, yourself, Suzanne, you know, we have to reflect on NASCAR because we're a part of NASCAR. We can't say nothing wrong. But just – It just makes me want to puke, Steve.
No, I mean you take a look at some of the coverage from this weekend, and I know we can harp on this as until now until sunset tomorrow, but you know, there's obviously a lot of fans out there, you know, even fans of that are part of NASCAR that follow the sport on a regular basis that are ready to throw Tony Stewart to the wind without knowing all the facts. Even us in the media, we only know what the Sheriff's Department and the track officials have told us. We only know what the coroner has said about the incident. We only know those facts. As I said when we came on the show earlier today, I have watched several of the videos objectively as best as I could from multiple different angles. I cannot find with any reason that Tony Stewart did anything of malice towards any competitor on that racetrack. It was hard racing, hard-fought racing in those sprint cars. And, you know, you take a look at the incident and you take a look what preceded and what happened after the incident. And he was just doing nothing merely and keeping up with traffic under caution, and I will bring this up because this is what NASCAR drivers are warned about every single week. You must maintain your speed under caution or you will lose that position. They are warned week in and week out, right in the driver's meeting. They're warned at the racetrack during the race by the tower officials that you must maintain that speed during those caution laps. Otherwise, you will lose that position and or potentially start in the back, depending on what the race official says at that moment, depending on what he feels that you have done to warrant such a situation. And Tony Stewart was doing exactly as he has always been told and as any race car driver is told, you are to maintain speed during the caution laps, otherwise you will forfeit that position that you're currently running in. And that's exactly what he was doing. The drivers that had already passed the wreck car when he had already gotten out of the sprint car were doing the exact same thing, and it could have been anybody on that racetrack that could have inadvertently done something. And as I say, I don't feel, and in my opinion, objectively saying whether I like Tony Stewart or not, I don't feel objectively that he did anything with malice that would have intentionally caused any harm towards any competitor on that racetrack.
Amen. Tell it, my brother. That's exactly right. And you can talk a lot better than I can because I got this old redneck voice down here in Talladega. You're exactly right. And Looks like we've got, Stephen, we got a caller. I know we've got Tina on her. We got a caller from the 507. Let's bring.
Hey, this is Chris calling from the 507 area.
Hey, Chris, this is Stephen. You're on the radio. Did you hear the trivia question that we had already thrown out earlier in the show? Hey, I'm
Stephen. Oh, okay. Yeah. Suzanne drug me up. Yeah, that Chris Holter is coming on with Tina Stoll on her NHRA stuff. And well, we're going to let them do their segment. Like I told you earlier, Tony's not going to be this. Tina's got Chris Holter, and I think she has Doug Herbert. But, Stephen, any last thoughts, and we'll let them have the show, and we'll go take a pit stop.
No final thoughts. We're going to go to Michigan this weekend, so it's going to be a little bit of competitive racetrack with 200-plus mile-an-hour speeds heading down there into turn one. So, that's my final thoughts of the night. I'll let you throw it over to them and let them do their segment.
Thank you very much, my friend. This is Mr. Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. Thanks, bud. I'll talk at you later, my friend. Y'all be safe up there. Tell Miss Emery we said hey. Well, Stephen dropped before I go. Okay, we're going to bring Tina. Tina, let me find my button. Hold on, I've lost my button. Let me find my button. Well, let's just bring Tina Stoll on. Miss NHRA. Miss Tina Stoll, and I've lost my button. Tina, how you doing tonight, sweetie?
I'm doing real good, man. Throw me to the sharks here.
No, I wouldn't. I know you heard about what all happened this weekend, and
I am passionate about this to an extent that I did not realize what a got my panties in a wad, to put it vulgarly, but yes, absolutely. This has been just absolutely an affront on every sense of common sense out there, and I'll tell you, if somebody needs their ass spanked, it's some of these commentators who are coming out there who have never sat behind a car, never sat in the wheel, doesn't have a clue what goes on in a driver's mind, and they should be spanked and thrown out. I am just absolutely disgusted. But you guys covered it. I mean, talk about some very coherent thought. It kind of leaves me.
Yeah, amen.
I'm just now spinning my wheels.
Yeah, I know it. And, you know, like I have, you know, myself and Stephen, we have to watch what we say. And I don't think I went too far there, but all this social media crap, you know, everybody's, I'm not going to say nothing.
I understand social media. Social media, people get they're running from their gut. They're speaking. You know, you got 140 characters. You say it. You're a big man. If you make a mistake, you delete it. But when somebody goes on the news and, you know, decides in their own mind to start to put, you know, their commentation on it when they're really completely, you know, have no experience, no whatsoever, and it just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts because the amount of fear that goes on in a driver's head to stay at that peak, because you're pushing everything to the peak of performance to perform. The idea that somebody is thinking ahead to every possible consequence of every person around them, there were how many cars around Tony Stewart at that time? He was contemplating what each car was doing in their position and all that. He may not have even known that somebody crashed until his spotter told him or something. And the idea that his whole mind focus went on to this one person is, you know, there are just not enough brain cells to be able to formulate how many conditions. When you're driving around a track and you got five cars around you, you're taking your performance off of your position in each one of those other cars. The fact that you're just lackadaisically have this extra time to think about the consequences of what another driver would do is just, to me, it's just unfathomable. And the fact that commentators who sit back and do nothing but sit behind a chair have never put their ass on the line, and they're going to now second guess what a driver is thinking, it absolutely is criminal. Because I think this guy, I mean, I don't care if you like him or know him. I've never met him. I don't know him. I know he's a very good driver. I know that a lot of people love him, a lot of people hate him. But the step of logic that it takes for a person to take him as a professional driver from that to, oh, I'm going to go out and try to purposely kill somebody, is so astronomically stupid.
Yes, ma'am.
It's like,
yes, ma'am. You know,
inconceivable.
I keep harping on it, but I have to watch what I say. And
I don't.
I'm going to prove the fifth. I know you don't, but I have to because myself and Stephen Wilson and Suzanne, we're affiliated with NASCAR. You know, we can't. But I'm going to straddle the fence. I want everybody to quit dogging everybody. Let the investigation go on. I said I was not going to get into this, but I did there at the end. I got a little ill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I drove you down that road. I'll tell you this,
No, you didn't.
I don't know NASCAR, but I know in a heartbeat, NASCAR would not let a driver out there if they actually thought he would do this. I mean, you're actually talking a psychopath. That's what upsets me so much, is that all these fans, out of their loyalty to other teams, are willing to dog him this way. We're talking about truly a sick individual who would choose to run down somebody. It's such a leap. This is not Hollywood. This is not a film. This is taking a person's life. And I don't think any NASCAR driver really, or NASCAR fan, really wants to believe that another driver, if it's not their own, would be a sociopath. That is not NASCAR. This is a great sport. There's huge competition. There's huge stuff going on. We've got this, and he does this, and he bumps a car. Bumping a car, taking a position, is not the same. This is criminal, and I don't think that most NASCAR fans would be NASCAR fans if they actually thought that drivers had this capability. And yet, in the media frenzy of let's be first out, let's try to get the head story, let's do this, they have done this. And you wonder why these sports are hurting. It's because of this kind of crap, is that when media starts to speculate and try to demonize this kind of thing, but it's insane. This is a family sport. We take our kids to it, et cetera.
You've been on your soapbox. No, ma'am. And Tina, like I said earlier, Steven said he's going to listen online. He's trying to, work on his speedwaydigest.com stuff. But you have, which I interrupted a while ago, Mr. Chris Holter. I'm going to bring him on. And once I bring him on, I'm going to take a pit stop, and I'll come back in a few minutes. I think I found my button. We're going to bring Mr. Chris Holter and to Tina Stowe.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey, Chris, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it very much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. Hey, I'll get off my little soapbox. Okay, I've been up there. Yeah. We'll probably go back on it because I'm still fuming inside. But first off, I want to hear what you're doing and what's going on in your racing. Now, everybody knows I'm a drag racing fan, and I'll tell you, believe it or not, racers of other motorsports actually will talk to me. They're okay with it. I am a straight line, can't do curves. They forgive me for that. But I am intrigued. And so give me a little bit of background about what you're racing and about what's going on in your world right now.
All right. Well, like you said, my name is Chris Holter, and I've been around the IMSA Continental Series this year. I have not raced in the Continental Series yet, but I plan to make my pro debut Labor Day weekend at Brainerd International Speedway in the Pirelli World Challenge Series. And I'll be racing for Breathless Performance Racing out of Miami, Florida. And,
very awesome.
I'll be in a Mazda 2. It's a TCB class. So I'm looking forward to getting my first start and getting on, finally racing on TV.
Now, how is that? Is there more pressure? Or I would imagine the pressure of just racing is enough. I mean, televised, you can't feel it, can't hear it, but, I mean, does that kind of up the ante?
Well, I think everything that I've done this year has led my path to this debut, I guess. I mean, I started networking with teams and walking around racetracks and December or January of this year, and this is something I've been thinking about for besides my almost my whole life, but thinking about in great detail for the past however 9 months or 8 months or whatever 10 months it's been. So the pressure of it being on TV is fine. I'm not worried about cameras. I'm more worried about cars. So yeah, it's going to be a great time.
Is it fair to say this is your big step into kind of the big league for you?
Definitely. This is my, like I said, it's my pro debut, and this is a giant step for me. So.
Now, what's the biggest charge for you? When you think about, like, going there and making it, obviously we all have our own dream. We all, you know, the outcome is to get the trophy at the end of the day. What do you think is the... What would you walk away from that day feeling pretty accomplished?
I mean, well, obviously every driver wants to win. I don't really know that that's in the cards out of the box, but if a race falls into my lap, I'm definitely going to capitalize on it.
Yeah.
You know, just being there and having my family there is going to be great. And, you know, just having my friends and family, I guess, that's around, and you know, knowing that I made a choice to put a lot of things aside in the past year to go for getting this pro debut and being
now,
there, you know, that's going to be the good thing.
Now, for me, okay, it's kind of a tainted question I'll ask you. Is your family, like, gung-ho behind you, like, yeah, go for it, or are they all, like, a little bit, you know, apprehensive, go for it, but don't, like, risk everything on this? Where is your family at on this? Because I know for me, my family is, like, from day one said, are you freaking crazy? This is, you know, I mean they show up to the races occasionally and da-da-da, but they basically just, you know, not necessarily 100% behind me. They've supported me the way they can, but people don't understand that everybody's family is not like, wow, this is the best thing that's ever happened. So where are you at in all that?
Well, yeah. I
didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. I'm just saying it's like sometimes it's harder. Sometimes you have to fight back people that should be 100% behind you. And you have to prove to them that I actually can do this.
Yeah, I think like my dad, I think he's a little more surprised that I'm actually doing it. But everybody in my family is very supportive of me. From my mom and my dad are very supportive. They've been, you know, they've been helping me get some things ready and whatnot. My godmother is incredibly supportive of me, and my sister down in Florida has been great. Also. Her and I walked around Daytona in January and talked to teams and whatnot. But, I'm sure they think I'm a little crazy. And
the hard part is that people who love you want to support you, but they also want to provide you with, like, a backup plan. And that can it can be a little difficult when you're, like, going guns out, going, okay, 100%, I'm going for my dream. And they'll go, don't worry, we have a big mattress back here. And you're thinking, what?
Yeah. Yeah,
but it is. It goes to show that, you know, racers a lot of times don't, you know, I mean, we're not all Courtney Forces or Brittany Forces, or, and I'm not picking on them. I love the fact that John supports them. But we don't all have parents who are, you know, can give us a backup plan and, you know, set it up. So it does have to be a drive from inside. And you definitely had a drive to succeed, because, you know, the math never does it. You look at the math, you look at the winnings, and it doesn't get you to the race. you look at what you have to produce. It's a difficult thing, but it's like, I always say it's like a musician. You know, there's a few that make the major bucks and the rest of them that play just because they love to play. And, you know, I've known you now for, you know, well over a year, and your desire to race goes, you know, based on the fact that you love what you do.
Yeah, I mean, ever since I was five, I told my aunt that I was going to be a race car driver when I grow up. And, you know, things in life kind of stall those plans and whatnot. But I got a really good outlook on what I need to do and what I need to accomplish to make, you know, everybody has to fulfill their life. And, you know, this is my number one bucket list item in my life is to race professionally. And, you know, I come from a background where I was married, and my wife, she passed away from brain tumors. And one of the things that we talked about before she passed away was that she wanted me to play another year of football. I was playing football for the local semi-pro team. And then after that, she wanted me to make sure I go racing. And so I've teamed up with the American Brain Tumor Association for this race. We're racing in her honor. Her name is Lisa Holter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have some American Brain Tumor Association decals on the car representing them. And, you know, it's fulfilling a bucket list on my list, and it's also racing in honor of her and how tough she was. So,
well, you know what? Let me know what I can do to, you know, I'm heading off to Topeka and Indy. Let me support whatever you're doing on this, and, you know, it's huge. Using what we get to do is entertainment to support great activities that can make some changes.
Mm-hmm.
We can't erase pain, but we can try to prevent the future stuff, and if we can do that, that'd be great. Right now, I think Steve has got to cut in real quick, and he's been doing a contest for the last hour or so, and he's going to come in, and they have a winner, and I think they're going to handle that, and then I hope you hang on.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to give a couple of plugs.
Sure.
All right.
Thanks, Tina, and this is not Steven, this is Tim. Laugh out loud.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay, we have a we have a caller from the 517 area code. First name's Jeff. The question was, Talladega Super Speedway was originally planned to be built in what North Carolina town by Bill France and Enoch Staley, but moved to Alabama due to local oppositions? We're going to bring Jeff on. Jeff, what is your answer to that question?
God, I don't even know. I'm just going to have to guess, maybe Kannapolis?
Good try, Jeff.
Okay.
Thanks, bud. All right.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Bye. Okay, Tina, I'm going to give it back to you and you and Chris, and maybe somebody will call later. Y'all have at it. Thanks,
okay.
Chris.
All right.
Well, hey, anyway, so, Chris, what is your next race?
My next race is going to be August 30th and 31st at Brainerd International Raceway in northern Minnesota. That's in the Pirelli
World
Challenge.
Is that track a part of the drag race track, too, by any chance? You know, you may not, but...
Yeah, it is, exactly. It's part of the whole NHRA
track. That is a crazy crowd up there.
Yeah, I bet. I haven't been to the NHRA up there, but I know that there are some stories from there.
Well, I've been up there, and when I was with teams, they banned me from going to the zoo.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that today where people were wearing, like, costumes made out of beer cases.
It's like a Comic-Con gone racing. It's quite a feat. And the funny thing is I've known more racers hurt at Brainerd not on the track than I do known on the track. it's quite a place to go. I wish I, when I went, my team banned me, and I had to sit back in the trailer at night. Yeah. Not that it's that bad, but they just knew that, like, you know, it doesn't take much for me to go out and have fun. And but it's quite a place. I think probably going that far north, you know, the races don't come very often, so they take full advantage of it when they're up there. So, you know, best of luck up there.
Definitely.
We're doing that. And the race after that would be which for you?
That's to be determined. I mean, I'm talking with IMSA Continental teams, and I would like to, you know, they're racing at Virginia International Raceway this weekend, and then after
now,
that,
most sponsors don't quite understand what they get when they get to sponsor a race car. I think historically, people think, oh, it's a sticker on the car. What would you tell a sponsor about what you get when you sponsor a car that racers and race teams now do that might kind of give them a better perception of that kind of marketing stuff?
Yeah, well, not only the exposure of the car being on the track, what a lot of people don't really understand is that that car actually is going other places during the middle of the week. It's going to their local dealerships to sit out,
right,
you know, and talk with people there. It's getting put out on social media via Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. There's vines that go out, little vine videos of cars and whatnot.
Right.
You know, word of mouth and especially social media. But the hidden thing, I think, is that that car is also going to other places. There's dealerships, like I said, and businesses that it's going to. And your logo may not be, let's say you're sponsored by Target and you have a sub decal of a different company. Well, that different company is now getting exposure from the Target company, let's say.
Right.
And, you know, it,
well, you know, I'm a champion of social media because,
yeah, I know.
You know, years have gone by, and, you know, the day of, and wouldn't it be easy if all we had to do was slap a decal and you write me a huge check with lots of zeros?
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen anymore. But
the
thing is that you know, you are branding yourself with a person and with the following that they have, and it's a little bit harder to determine who that is now because, you know, social media has made things different. But, there, you know, you scale back and you look back at how many people actually care about this driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are plenty of websites that will tell you exactly that, and those are the things that move things forward because – the days of you sign up and take the money are gone. I know that drivers now are very choosy about who they sign on with because I'm not going to throw away, you know, 10 years of making friends on the internet and social media sites. I'm not going to throw it away just because somebody's willing to write me a check. It's just not worth it because as teams move from driver to driver, the driver doesn't have the ability to take it, you know, with them. But the people who trust us, we do. They follow us. They don't follow the brand. And so we have way more to lose because we're investing years of not being paid. I mean, drivers aren't being paid to do social media.
Yeah,
but
no.
when it comes down to it, you know, if we're doing our job, Our fans and followers follow us, and I know that you've done an exceptional job of that, especially when very few drivers in your, you know, in your field are doing it because they can't. Too often people, like, put stuff down in dollar and cents, which I would advise if you think that social media is going to make you money, just quit now because you'll put way too many hours in it. But if you want to know people who love what you do, social media is great. If you want to find out that, you know, people that you respect, social media is great because that's where you find people. It's amazing to me at races. I've been out in the middle of the smallest little track. I didn't even know. I just needed to do some test runs.
Mm-hmm.
And people come and go, I follow you on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm anybody big on Twitter. I'll tell you, though, I am a driver who will talk to anybody on Twitter. I love finding out about people. People are interesting. I don't care what you do. If you do something that I've never seen or didn't even know people did, you fall to the top of my list. I know that you're the same way. I'm intrigued by people who do stuff that's different than me, but I also love people who do the stuff that I obviously love. And it's quite a big draw for me. So I'm looking forward to when you race close enough to Texas, I can come out and, you know, borrow a seat in the passenger side or duct tape me to the roof so I can go around the track at least once.
Yeah, definitely. IMSA Continental is going to be there at COTA at the end it's in September, I believe, and, you know, if we can get enough funding together, we can get a ride going there for Texas, which would be awesome.
Now, people want to follow you. What's your Twitter and what's your website? Do you have a website? Do you have a Facebook? What's the best way to contact you?
I've got everything. So on Twitter, my sign or whatever is at Cholter7. It's Cholter and the number 7.
Okay.
On Facebook, I have Facebook.com Chris Holter Racing.
Okay.
And,
I'll make sure to retweet those links for people
excellent.
If they want to catch up with you. But, you know what, seriously, in a broad spec, you know, my thought is if you have a racer or a driver that you like what they do, tweet them, Facebook them, follow them. If they don't follow you back or they don't respond, find somebody else. There are so many drivers out there that actually do care. And I'll tell you this, I've been doing this Twitter stuff for 4 years. If you don't really like it, you can't keep it up. It's too much work. It's too much. If you're going to fake it, you're going to burn out. And when you find somebody who actually cares about their fans and cares about what they're doing, it's not to say that they can respond to every tweet, or if you tweet them 50 times a day, they're going to be able to respond. But in general, and I've proven this, you know, I get back to as many people as I can, and it's very rarely that anybody has to tweet me twice and get an answer. If I don't respond the first time, usually it's an oversight or just volume. But it's not that hard. And the thing is, this is entertainment. And I love racing, and I know you love racing. We wouldn't put so much of our life into making a skill set that is not hugely profitable. We're not brain surgeons. We're not getting, you know, $500 an hour. We do this because we love it. And the thing I love the most is when people who love what I do love my kind of racing, love racing in general. When that's their drive, I want to talk to them. It's not a far cry, you know, because we all enjoy talking to people about things that we like to enjoy. So, you know, follow Chris Holter, definitely. And, you know, and definitely if it's something, you know, if you see something different, throw those questions at him. I get thrown – occasionally I'll get a question. I go, damn, you know, that's a tough question. Because, you know, there's a lot of insight in that. And I don't mind that people don't agree with everything. If I did, I'd have to, like, live in the desert. But, you know, we all enjoy people who challenge us. And not everybody needs a kiss ass. And I certainly don't. I certainly know Chris doesn't. So we welcome, if you have a different opinions, you know, chime in on it, because that's what makes life the spice of everything that works.
Yeah, and a big thing that you'll find on my Twitter right now is how I'm promoting my own crowdfunding to for this race, the Pirelli World Challenge race at Brainerd. Got hooked up with Guy Cosmo, and and he has a company started called First Gear Project. It's firstgearproject.com. And
that's basically, it's like a Kickstarter program.
Now, how does crowdfunding work? Just by the word, we kind of get it. You're putting something out there. Is it, the idea is that you find people with common goals?
Yeah, basically, if you are somebody that is, in my case, if you're interested in Pirelli World Challenge, you're interested in Mazda Speed Motorsports, or if you have somebody that has been affected by brain tumors or whatnot, we have rewards on my site for different levels of money that you've donated. We can get your name on the
car. So you're using the crowdfunding to really bring about a little bit of understanding on brain tumors. And
yeah, definitely.
Issues like that. Okay, well, so does it cost $100? Is it a big commitment, or can people come in at any level? How does that work?
I have from $2, which is, the bottom, not the bottom, but it's the lowest level, 5,
right.
15, 25, all the way up to $2,000, which gives you tickets to the race and a bunch of other stuff. We're going to have, we're going to add some things to that after I have another announcement, but we add some things to the higher levels, but, it's a coffee at the coffee shop is all you can get in on, get on it that way. So, Guy Cosmo.
Well, I'll tell you, the fact that you step out and use your, anybody, you can go out and race, and it can be, trust me, from racing, I love the experience. I love the thrill. I love the whole bit. But if you can take that great experience and contribute to something that needs some recognition, that is by far a huge thing. And I meant, something like, we're talking brain tumors, not necessarily very well understood.
Definitely not.
They're not on the top 10, who knows of what is the disease this year we're all going to be funding.
Right,
and yet,
everybody.
We have people every day who are sitting there waiting on an answer. What a greater way to put your experience and your exposure out there for that. Well, I'll tell you, I will be donating on your site. It's a great cause.
Awesome.
I hate... to think about what it's like to be a parent who has a child who has a brain tumor, or a wife or a husband who's hoping for a cure, and watching the love of their life, getting that chance pulled away from them. So I think the fact that you kind of look beyond the fun of the sport and you're willing to focus a little bit and give that kind of, exposure to that, I just have to say kudos to you. That's definitely not the easiest way to get money, and it's not the easiest way to continue a career, but in the end, the rewards are amazing, and what, being able to do that, appreciate you stepping in and stepping up to do that. That's a pretty awesome thing. So,
bring him on, Herman.
Hey.
Hey.
Glad to have you in here. What's up? I don't know if we lost him or he got bored.
I don't know.
We'll see. Well, hey, I do appreciate that. He might chime back in. We'll see. But I certainly appreciate anything I can do. You feel free to Twitter me, and my address is tinsoulracing.com or tinsoulracing at, and you're Chris Holter 7.
It's just C Holter 7.
You're right, C Holter.
Yep.
I will tweet you out tonight. So if the people follow me and they want to follow you, they'll make sure to be able to make that connection. Let me know if I can do anything to help you. Along the lines of what you're doing. Keep me posted, and I appreciate so much you taking the time to come in and do some time on here. Now, before I'm going to let you loose, and I kind of held off on this, we're all kind of hurting a bit over what we've seen on in the recent news. Do you have any insight, you think, from your type of racing? Because I'm a drag racer, and I will step back and say I know what I know from my position, having never done a circle track or whatever. Is there anything that you would put out there?
Well, I was at Road America this past weekend, and I had just gotten into my tent. I was camping at Road America and during the IMSA race, and I saw a thing online that said that Stewart was going to prison. And so I went onto Twitter, and I wanted to see what was going on. Unfortunately, I saw the video. I didn't really want to, but I just wanted to understand it a little bit better. My first thought was, why is Kevin getting out of the car? You stay in the car until rescue shows up. It's kind of the first thing. But, he walked down the banking, and then he moved down a little bit more. And there's a car that went by him. It looked like the car before Tony almost hit him to begin with. And then he came down the banking more. And I don't think, with those cars, the top of the wing on the top, the right side of it is pretty low. I really don't think that Stewart saw him. And he was, besides that, he had on a dark fire suit, and the track was pretty dimly lit. I think that at the last minute, Tony probably saw him, and that's where the whole he turned to the side thing came.
Where's your heart in all this? I mean, is it just the pain of? I mean, and I'll say right out, my heart is like the pain of being a driver who got involved in this, and that wasn't, you know, got sucked into it, and now has to deal with it. I mean, it absolutely hurts me, and the thought that everybody would rethink everything I've been in my whole life.
Yeah, I don't
to justify
think,
it. Yeah.
I mean, in my heart, I feel obviously terrible for the family of Kevin Ward Jr. and my condolences are out to them and whatnot.
It's not mutually exclusive. I mean, it's like this is not a one side or the other. This is
And then on the other side, I mean, you know, Tony's got to just be beating himself up every single minute of every day, and just that it happened. And, you know, I feel bad for him also. I mean, I'm not really a Tony Stewart
fan. You know what?
I
don't care who you are as a driver. Tony Stewart is not so callous. This was another incident. This is a hugey. This is huge.
Yeah.
It's just Dale Earnhardt, he'd been around forever. And I'll probably get murdered for saying this, but he's been around forever. But I believe if he had this tragedy in front of him, it would hurt him as well.
Oh, definitely.
The idea is that the news is callous, but the drivers aren't. You know, the news is used to reporting this 200 times a week, but drivers aren't. And it's like the idea that somehow this was like so callous that Tony Stewart, he brushed it off and da da da. He was probably in shock.
Way.
I was, you know, as a firefighter, we were taught to shut everything in, and the first, you know, 6-7 hours, everything was normal, nothing unusual happened, and then you go through everything, and then it would kind of connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tony Stewart has probably been, you know, trained to shut up, say nothing. It's all normal as usual, nothing, da 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 da. And it wasn't until everything, you know, relayed down that you took a chance to realize what happened. And I mean, God forbid, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah,
these
definitely.
Are combat injuries. Nobody wants to go through that. Nobody expects to go through that. And the fact that people would say that, I'm sorry, you're all watching way too many comics and TV shows, because people don't just, you know, they just don't not comply to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no race car driver out there that's going to intentionally want to kill somebody on the racetrack.
No.
That's just not going to happen. And even when I got the news, I'm sitting in the tent at Road America, you know, my first thought was, you know, reading a bunch of stuff, but in my head, I wanted to take all the information in, go, you know, go to sleep on it a little bit, and then, you know, have something, have a worthwhile opinion about it, where instead of just spouting off
right.
random information like a lot of the media did and a lot of people did, I want to, you know, take some time and get the facts and have a real good opinion as to what actually went down, you know, and it sucks all around. I mean, it's not fun. It's not cool.
It doesn't
anything.
Improve the sport by
no,
any
that,
degree. I mean, it's like looking at the sport from the outside and saying, see, that's what they were all along. And I'm not willing to condemn that, you know, condemn it to that. I mean, this sport is about family, and it's about, you know, every part of it. Anybody who's been in it knows that it takes a family, whether the family's your crew or the family's whatever, it would not be tolerated. If anybody ever thought that somebody was gunning for somebody else, I don't care if you're Tony Stewart or whatever, it would be taken care of, because we don't, you know, the nice thing about competition in motorsports is we all want justice.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to play fair.
Yeah.
If you're better than me, I'll live with it. But, you know, we just want to have, and that's kind of that equality thing that's always kind of in fluctuation, is that we make sure that everybody gets a fair chance. And, you know, it's not every day, it's not entirely fair, which is why we all bitch.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what we're all fighting for, because that's why we all race. We just want to prove we're the best at what we do in the circumstances we're given, and God love us. And that's what I think America loves about racing, is that if we all have the chance to do the best we possibly can under fair circumstances, here we are. You know, let us know.
I believe everybody has a competitive spirit, and it was on that Saturday morning. I was at the rental go-kart track at Road America, and there was two guys. I mean, this was for fun. We paid $20 to go drive around go-karts or whatever. I was in the line with Beth Christ, who's an MX-5 Miata driver, and two guys actually took each other out and were yelling at each other. Right there in the rental go-karts. I mean, everybody's competitive no matter what level of racing. It was crazy. We kind of all second-guessed, like, should we really go do this or not? But
what's funny is that it's not just the pros. We have a competitive nature. As sad as that is, we'll fight over,
it's crazy. But
we get a rise to the top. But it's fun. And as long as we all know that we're, like, getting a fair advantage, it's a good thing.
Definitely.
Well, hey, Chris, I appreciate you so much coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I just have one announcement I'd like to make.
Yes.
I just signed on today with a sponsor. It's going to help a little bit out, but just wanted to get their product out there for everybody to take a look at. It's called GoPuck, and basically it's a lithium-ion battery it's a battery that allows you to charge up your phone or your computer through a USB device.
Okay, now tell me, like, is this the thing that when, like, you're stuck out and you've overused your phone, they can charge it up instantaneously?
It's not instant, but it's a lot faster than most.
But I mean, you, like, it's a plug-in, so you can, like, love this.
Yeah. And you can put them in your cars and have your GoPro, it'll power up your GoPro. Basically, I used mine all weekend at Road America. I didn't have an outlet. I had a tent, so I use mine all weekend, but it's they're at gopuck.com. It's GOPUCK.com.
Okay.
And they have it's a really cool product that, you know, if you're...
Well, okay, have them link me to that or tweet me, because I need that, because my big pet peeve is when I, like, overextend my battery and lose stuff. So definitely hook me up on that because, you know, I got to make that happen. But awesome on that. And hook me with their link and I'll retweet it and my guys can get that. But huge, I mean, seriously, people don't realize how big getting out of the connection can be.
Mm-hmm.
So important because that's where you're at and that's where everything's happening. So hopefully, keep me posted because I want
to
watch where you're at the next 2 weeks. I'm going to be Topeka and I'll be Indy, so we'll kind of be in the same area, but I want to, you know, support you. Hopefully we'll be out there for the troops. And, you know, I mean, I have some, you know, I would love to be able to get out there. Topeka is one of the places that, you know, those guys are the best. So if we can make that happen, we'll do that. But in the meantime, you know, stay in link with me, and we'll be out here every Tuesday night, and hope you can join us.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It's great.
Is there anything, last minute before we go, is there anything you want to link out there or you want to do a shout-out for that we've missed?
We got GoPuck. We have FirstGearProject.com.
Okay.
And then follow me on Twitter and you can check me out on Facebook at Chris Holter Racing. My website's also chrisholterracing.com. So.
Okay, if you don't follow him on Twitter, I'm going to run you down and spank you. Okay, not a promise, but yeah,
you
I will.
Try.
Okay, so make sure you follow
Thanks,
this
everybody.
Dude. Great thing. Thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward to having you back. We'll see where it goes. So is there anything else before tonight's over? Anything that we need to, like, cover up?
I think we're good. Just know that there's another set of racing out there. It's called road racing. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. That's it?
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me I did anything wrong?
Anything what?
Come on. At least talk with me.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Chris. This is Tim. If I can, buddy.
Hey, Tim. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for coming on and everything. I just hit you up on Twitter. Just want to let you know.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Just sitting back and let you have your segment. And, you know, next week, Tony wanted me to say something, if I can, buddy, before I forget. We got a little over 10 minutes left. The reason Tony didn't come on tonight, he's working on a big show next week.
I heard about
set him up.
He's got a big show coming on. I'm excited.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, he does. And maybe some of this, you know, stuff like y'all talking about, you know, like I can't cross the line with Tony Stewart. I can't cross the line. But I want to say our thoughts and prayers go out to Kevin Ward Jr. and the family and friends of them and to Tony Stewart and Stewart Haas Racing and Mr. Steve Addington. I'm friends with him now on Facebook. And I don't want to
you
I
know
don't
what?
Want to cross the
can
line.
I say something? Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
This is not
this
is not a Tony Stewart Ward. My God, I have a kid his age. This is not a kid. It's not a him versus him. This was not meant to be. It shouldn't have happened. And I can't. Crap, as a kid I would have done the same thing, but this was
right.
not
I know
a this you know and I look and I go damn I the pain on both sides is so real, it's so whatever, but it doesn't have to be somebody's fault to make sense of it. It was an accident, and it was bad judgment, and it doesn't demonize either one. The kid's being a kid. He should have been able to be a kid and make a mistake, and it would have been all right, and it unfortunately it wasn't. but it wasn't anybody maliciously trying to end that short, and it and that's true. But it doesn't decrease the pain, and I hate that. But the reality is we can't fix that. And it's
right. And, you know, Tina,
horrible.
Just like, you know, just like, yeah, right. And, you know, just like Chris said earlier, I have to watch what I say because I'm affiliated with NASCAR. You know, just like Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. I have to watch what I say. But, you know, Chris hit a good point. And some of my good friends at work, when that kid got out of the car, he stayed out of the groove. And he did keep coming down. And he got to probably, he wasn't on the lower groove, but he was in the middle groove of the racetrack. And that track is dimly lit.
Nobody would have said he deserved
like
to die. Nobody deserved that.
No. And
nobody's
not
saying that.
I'm not choosing sides because I can't.
No.
And we'll let the investigation go on. And
see,
I think it
the
was.
The thing is, okay,
is
Tim,
my
here's my
opinion.
Thing is, and I'm going to, like,
was,
and you don't have to have me on
I
next
think
week.
It was,
but
I think
they
it
shouldn't
was
be investigating it.
A race. Well, they got to, Tina, because it was, you know.
But I'm
but
saying
anyway,
it's like there was
in
no
my
intent.
Opinion, I think. No, there wasn't. There was not. I think it was
right.
Purely.
Because if I go down the track and somebody hops the wall, am I going to be crucified? It's not fair to the driver. That's what I'm saying. It's like, as a driver, if we are going to be persecuted because somebody hops the wall and comes over into our lane, as a drag racer, there's a point where, like, I don't want to be – I would never want to be crucified the way that Tony has been this week.
I think everybody agrees with you on that.
That's the hard part, is that people don't realize that, it happens and people do this. But as a driver, if you took every driver and said, okay, if somebody with beyond the rules, everybody knew the rules are you don't hop out of your car and hop over into traffic.
Yes.
If I'm subjected to the same rules, wait a second. It might be totally different. It could be a person who's drag racing and is insane and is doing whatever. But if I'm going to be considered a murderer because somebody hops out of the lane and hops in front of my car and I run them over, I have to be concerned about that? Really?
What was what was he doing out there? And, you know, Tim, like I said earlier,
I have a 20-year-old child, and they do stuff because they're emotionally elevated, and they think this is their one dramatic moment in their life. And he probably felt that Tony Stewart cutting him off was the dramatic moment in his life. But you don't get to do that.
Let me finish, please.
Okay, I'm shutting up.
Thank you.
No,
you're fine.
I'm kind of shutting up.
But
a little bit.
Me and Stephen had talked earlier. I mean, you know, this was a racing incident. And, you know, I'm not going to take no sides because I can't because I'm affiliated with NASCAR. And just like Chris said earlier, the young man, if he were to state, well, I got to watch what I'm saying. But,
okay.
I mean,
what you're saying.
Like I had said earlier, before y'all come on, I don't know if y'all heard it. Me and Mr. Humpy Wheeler are real good friends. And I would say it just like Humpy said. This social media bullcrap that people are trying to, I mean, you know, they're trying to be the judge and the jury at the same time. And it makes me want to puke. That's exactly what Humpy would say. It makes me want to puke. Let the investigation go out. And whatever they find is fine. But don't persecute Tony Stewart and Stewart Haas Racing for what happened. That was a dimly lit racetrack, and I've seen some of these sprint cars. It is hard to see out of there. And just like Mr. Holton said earlier.
Well, and
He was in a dark-colored fire suit. I mean, you know, and I don't want to take sides.
Not just that. Are they Supermen? They're not Supermen.
They're
coming around. They're looking at what they look at. What they look at is where are all the cars? Where are they in progression of where they are, and how do they make the next line?
Well,
they're not looking
like,
at
what they look like,
people walking on the track.
Well, definitely. His line of sight, Tony Stewart's line of sight, was probably to the inside. So he's looking at the next
his line was, is the car, is he out of play? When he saw it on the wall, he said, okay, he's out of play, and he moved on. Because, I'm sorry, Tony Stewart has been around how long? And you think that his big, I mean, the thing was, like, this car was not his big, you know, ooh, this is the guy I got to get. I mean, this isn't a 20-year grudge. This was one guy in the mix.
He didn't do it deliberately.
So he was looking at, okay, so I don't even know what happened to that car, but the car is on the side, so he's out of play, and now I'm going here. He was not looking pedestrian. I feel so
right.
bad, because you know what? I would feel horrified if I ever hit somebody.
Oh,
I mean, I would feel horrified.
And
racing,
and I know
what happens. I mean, sometimes
Tina,
people hit
we're
you.
Coming up on, we're coming up on 3 minutes, Tina, if you want to talk to Chris, and we can sort of end this
no,
now, and
we're
I hate
good.
To end it, because I'm,
good.
You know,
people
just
people who
like,
know me
okay.
know what I'm talking about. They know that it's like, man, you are who you are. He'd never go after anybody. I mean, he may bump
no,
somebody. He ain't going after anybody. And the rest of it's bullshit, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
Amen.
There's no way that Tony's going to be going after
no.
another driver that's walking
that,
on the track.
That's bullshit. That's such
no.
bullshit. It's sad.
Yep.
It
I
is. And,
Tim, thank
Tina,
you very much. Talk to you next
thank
week.
Thank you very much, Tina. And, Chris, thank you very much, too. Y'all have a great weekend. And I'm sorry I stirred everything up, but y'all have a great weekend.
Good.
We'll talk to y'all. Now, Chris, I followed you on Twitter, so hit me back up, bud.
We will.
All right, y'all have a good night.
Take it
easy. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Miss Tina.
Two, three.